If you want to turn over to the book of Acts, we're going to be studying a Bible character tonight. And as soon as I say the book of Acts, you might say, oh, well, maybe we're studying Peter. No, that's not it. Well, maybe it's Paul. No. John? No. Oh, do we have a song of invitation? 690? Okay, 690 would be song of invitation. I thought maybe you were trying to tell me the microphone wasn't on. 690 will be the song of invitation. I thought about that before I got up, but then when I got up here, I was so excited, I forgot all about the song of invitation. There are a lot of characters in the book of Acts. It's just full of different people, and some of them good, some of them bad. Most of them a little bit of both, although trying to be good, or some trying to be bad. But we're going to look at Barnabas tonight. Despite the fact that he's not a really popular person in the New Testament, he's mentioned really in very few places, and yet there's a lot we can learn from Barnabas. First of all, we can learn that we don't have to be mentioned all over the place in order to be important. Barnabas was very important to the early church, and yet, as I said, he's not really mentioned in that many scriptures. And most of the scriptures that mention him are in the book of Acts. He's mentioned also in 1 Corinthians and in Galatians, and as far as I know, those are the only other two books that even make mention of him. But he is important to the early church, and for many reasons. So I want to turn to Acts chapter 4. We'll start there. Chapter 4 and verse 36. Let's find out a little bit about Barnabas and see what we can learn from him that can help us in our Christian lives and help us to help others as well. Verse 36 says, and Joseph, who by the apostles was surnamed Barnabas. So his name really is Joseph, or Joseph as the King James puts it, but Joseph. We know people named Joseph, that's a common name. But they gave him another name. Just like God often changed people's names. Simon, Jesus changed his name to Peter, and others who had one name and were given another. Abram became Abraham, and so forth. Well, the apostles gave him the name Barnabas. And as we read on, it says, which is being interpreted, the son of consolation, or the son of encouragement. He consoled people. He comforted people. He encouraged people. And obviously that was so much a part of his nature that they called him that. They called him the son of encouragement, or son of consolation, because he was so much an encourager. And that's the first thing we can learn from Barnabas. You know, regardless of what our name is, people think of us in terms of our personality. They may say, well, there's somebody that's grumpy all the time. And they may say, well, you know, that person's always smiling. They might say, you know, that person is mad at the world. They might say, yeah, that person just pouts and cries all the time. Or, that person is depressing to be around. They're always thinking negatively. They're always so pessimistic, always looking at the bad things. Or they might say, you know, that person is really somebody I like to be around. They really help me feel better just being around them. That's the kind of person Barnabas was. Regardless of what our name is, people think of us in terms of what we are, who we are, what we do, and how we act. Barnabas was well known by the apostles, and he was well known enough by them that they gave him another name, a name that applied to his character. Now, Joseph has a meaning all its own, but they saw in his character something that said, he needs another name. We do that often with nicknames, you know, we just kind of give somebody a nickname. And sometimes those nicknames aren't very kind that people give. But in this case, they gave him a good name. The son of encouragement. Then it goes on to say, a Levite and of the country of Cyprus. seemed that he was a close associate of the apostles, according to verse 36, so much so that they knew him well enough and knew his character well enough to give him a nickname. And a name that pointed to his personality. What if God were to give us another name? What if he were to give us a name based on the work we did among the saints? Would he consider us an encourager like Barnabas? Would we be maybe a worker? Maybe we'd be just another member. Maybe we'd be bench warmer. Maybe we'd be AWOL. What would we be? What would you be if God was going to give a name? We've got one brother back here tonight that could be Baby. He's our new brother in Christ. So he'd be Baby or Junior. But he's got some growing to do and some learning about how things work with the church. But he's eager to do that. How sad it would be if someone who's been in the church for 20 years were considered a child in the faith. That'd be sad indeed. So there are all kinds of things. What would God think of you if he were going to give you a nickname, so to speak? Well, it's important for us to think about that because those that we associate with are influenced by us. Barnabas was the son of encouragement. The apostles named him that because obviously he had encouraged them. And the apostles needed some encouragement. They were facing a world that was hostile to the gospel. The Jews certainly were hostile to the gospel, had put Christ to death. And here they are still gung-ho to go out and preach the gospel, knowing it may cost them their lives. They needed some encouragement, and in more than one way. Maybe in a future lesson we'll look at some of the ways that Barnabas did encourage, because he encouraged in more than just one way. But he did encourage them. Well, in the same way, those that we are around, we're going to either influence them for good or for bad. In the church particularly, there are some in the church who may be troublemakers or may be discouraging to others, always pointing out every little fault that we might have. And I feel worthless when I'm around that person, whereas somebody else points out the good that we're doing and then kindly helps us to correct some flaw that we have as well. But all of those around us help mold us as Christians. And we need to be sure that we're molding in a good way, and not just growing moldy. We need to think about that and prepare ourselves. We see that he was of the tribe of Levi. You know, the tribe of Levi was the priesthood in the Old Testament under the Mosaical law. So this man could have been a very important person under the old law, but when he chose to become a Christian, he gave up any of that highfalutin type of a personality and of prestige that goes along with being that. And he said, I'm right here with everybody else. Now he was still a priest, but he was a priest among other priests, just as we all are as Christians. We are all priests to God. But he was of the tribe of Levi, the tribe that the priest came from. So quite likely he had also a strong spiritual heritage. Many of us may be able to understand that. He had to leave the religion of his parents in order to become a Christian. Now, they might not have necessarily thought about it in that way at that time, because the Jewish religion was pointing toward Christ. But still, there were many, and still are today, who refuse to give up the Jewish religion for Christianity. They still hold on to that Jewish religion. He could have been like that. He could have just said, no, my grandparents were Jews. My parents were Jews. They were Levites. They were of the priesthood. I'm a priest. I'm not changing. But instead, he became a Christian, and more than that, became an encourager in the church. You know, someone is just not born with this Barnabas spirit, this encouragement spirit. It's not something that comes naturally. quite naturally, we're all concerned with ourselves. The first thing a child is concerned with is not whether mommy and daddy are getting a good night's sleep. The child is concerned with, I've got a wet diaper. I've got some hunger pains here. I'm scared. I'm alone. That's what the child thinks of, the newborn. It's taught as it goes along, or at least it should be taught, those better ways of thinking of others, and then that idea of being an encourager like Barnabas was. So apparently his parents had taught him well. Either his parents or someone else close to him that had had a great influence on him had taught him the importance of being an encourager. You see how much we can glean just from one verse, just from a few things that are said, and yet we can learn so much about this man and about his past. What's more, we see he was from the country of Cyprus, and that's an island out in the Mediterranean Sea, just off of the coast. This was also one of the first stops on Paul and Barnabas' first missionary journey in Acts chapter 13. One of the first places they went was Cyprus. I wonder if Barnabas may have run into some old friend, or maybe old enemies, or maybe just people who had known of him. Was that a good thing or a bad thing? Well, since Barnabas is known as the son of encouragement, we would think that people who had known him would have thought rather highly of him, most likely. What about us? We go back home. What do people think about us? Can we make an impact? Barnabas returned to Cyprus later on in Acts chapter 15 and took John Mark with him after he and Paul separated ways. What about those home connections? He apparently thought it was important to try to go back home and tell those people he had known, or at least those people that were from his hometown, tell them about the gospel. So much so that he went with Paul, and then again he went back to try again to teach the gospel. We need to think about that. Those that we've known, go back and try to teach them the gospel. Now that we have learned the gospel, now that we know the truth, to go back and try to share it with them so that they can have it as well. Then in verse 37, we see it says, having land, he sold it and brought the money and laid it at the apostles' feet. We see he was a landowner. Now, that doesn't mean that he was dishonest or greedy. Some people automatically think, well, if you're a person of wealth, that if you have financial means, you must be just a horrible person. You must have just walked all over everybody to get it. But that's not necessarily the case. We see Barnabas is quite a wonderful individual, very much an encouraging person, and even goes to the extreme that he even, some of this land he has, he sells this land in order to give the money to the church. He's not a dishonest and greedy type individual. In fact, he's quite the opposite. He's very selfless and very honest in his working. We see in chapter 5 another couple that weren't quite so honest. They too had some land and sold it, but they lied about the whole situation, whereas Barnabas was very straightforward and honest. He sold the land and he brought the money to lay at the apostles' feet. It also shows that he was very dedicated to the Lord's work. This is one of the ways he was encouraging the apostles. Certainly, the early church needed some financial means to do the things that needed to be done. You couldn't take a missionary journey like Paul took without having some financial means. Might have to stay in an inn. Might have to ride on a ship, and that doesn't come free. Those things would have had to have been paid for. And so Barnabas was helping to spread the gospel with the land that he sold. But he was a landowner. That also means he was pretty high up in the financial world. Not everyone owned land. Just as today there are many who may not own land, but many, especially in the United States, own some property. It may not be a large amount of property, but many people own a half an acre or an acre, or even a lot that the house is on, and they own the house. But that wasn't always the case in the New Testament times. There were many people that had to live with someone else. We see Lazarus and Mary and Martha all sharing a house. still, they were sharing a house. They didn't each one have their own. So we see Barnabas was a fairly prosperous man, and he had prospered financially, and he is obviously prospering spiritually as well. He has grown to the point that he's realized that spiritual things were more important than the financial things. He could have held on to that land and said, well, I worked hard to earn this. I deserve to keep it. And he wouldn't have necessarily been wrong for that. But he didn't do that. Instead, he willingly sold that land and gave it to the work of the church. As best we can understand the text from 1 Corinthians chapter 9, what Paul says in verses 3 through 6, Barnabas was most likely not married. We look to 1 Corinthians chapter 9, beginning in verse 3. They were asking about apostleship, and Paul is defending himself. But he says, my answer to them that do examine me is this: have we not power to eat and to drink? Have we not power to lead about a sister, a wife, as well as other apostles, and as brethren of the Lord and Cephas? Or I only and Barnabas, have not we power to forbear working? So he's talking about himself and Barnabas. He says, don't we have just as much right as the other apostles do to have a wife and to take her around with us? And Paul, we know, was not married, but the indication there as well is that Barnabas was in that same situation. Because of that, he was able to devote a tremendous amount of time and energy to the Lord's work. Whereas we read very little of Peter after the start of the church in Jerusalem. He was very important to the work at the church in Jerusalem, but because he was married, he was grounded, he was planted in that town. He had relatives, he had a family there. But Barnabas and Paul went all over the world preaching the gospel. And this shows us two things. First of all, that there's room for all kinds of people in the Lord's church. Some who are able to travel far and wide, and others who stay in one place and help the church. Both can be important, and both can be very useful to the Lord. But secondly, we see that someone who does not have a wife is no less capable of doing the Lord's work than someone who does. In fact, it might seem really quite the opposite, that someone who is married doesn't have the same abilities to just jump up and go and leave as Paul and Barnabas did. It's kind of interesting that in the church today, most churches, if they're looking for a preacher, they want a married man. And yet we see Paul and Barnabas were married. Here they go all over preaching and teaching. It's not a requirement. It's not a necessity. It can be a great help, but it can also be a great hindrance. And I have known men who quit preaching because of their wives, and failed to continue in the path of sharing the gospel with others in that way. Now, they may have settled into a community and done quite a wonderful work with the church, but they just couldn't continue preaching because of their wives. A wife can either be a hindrance or an asset, either way. But we see many things about Barnabas in just these few short verses. But he is an encourager. What about us? Do we want to be like Barnabas? Do we want to encourage those around us, or do we want to always do those things that bring them down? Certainly, our goal should be to get as many people as possible on the road to heaven with us. The best way to bring people over to your side is not to criticize them, not to condemn them constantly. The best way to get people onto your side is to encourage them. Now, that doesn't mean that we ignore the bad things. It doesn't mean we ignore sin. It doesn't mean we ignore doctrinal problems that somebody may have. But we encourage them to do good and to do what is right, rather than pointing out all the bad you're doing. You're doing this wrong, and you're doing this wrong, and you're doing this wrong. That doesn't give someone something positive to work on. When we tell somebody, have you ever thought about trying it this way? Instead of, well, the way you're doing it's just all wrong. And I've known people to approach it in that very way. And just throw in to somebody and just yell and scream and, boy, well, I really showed them they were wrong. Is that the way we would want someone to approach us if we were wrong? No. If we will remember what Jesus taught, that we should do unto others as we would have them do unto us, we'll remember that when we do find the need to correct the wrong, we'll try much harder to do it in a loving way, so that we, like Barnabas, can encourage people. We don't know how many people came to Christ as a result of Barnabas' work. We have no record. It doesn't say Barnabas had so many people baptized. No, the Bible never gave credit in terms like that. The Bible instead always said that the credit belonged to God for these things. But we do know, without a doubt, that regardless of how many people Barnabas baptized, and maybe he never baptized a single one, but we do know he had an impact on the sharing of the gospel and the spread of the gospel in the first century. He had that impact because he encouraged the apostles, so much so that they named him Son of Encouragement. And not only did he encourage them with his words, but he also encouraged them with his friendship, and he encouraged them with his money. And we know that the church grew mightily in the first century. Not all of it certainly was due to Barnabas, but we know that he had a part that he played there. We look to the case of Barnabas and Paul, or Barnabas and Saul. We see also that when Saul was converted, on the road to Damascus, he saw the light, was blinded by it. The Lord told him to go and wait in Damascus, and he would send someone. And Ananias came to him and preached the gospel to him, said, arise and be baptized. And Saul obeyed that word that had come to him from the Lord through Ananias. And he became a Christian. And the first thing that he did after he became a Christian, he was so excited about what he had learned, he wanted to go back and to teach others. But the others weren't so happy to have him as a part. The other Christians were not glad of him. In fact, they doubted him in Acts chapter 9, verse number 26. Says, and when Saul was come to Jerusalem, he essayed to join himself to the disciples, but they were all afraid of him and believed not that he was a disciple. Imagine, the church was under persecution. Let's imagine for a moment that our senators or our president somehow gained power to start to persecute the church. Let's say George Bush himself becomes a dictator and he begins persecuting the church. And if he then were to show up in this congregation and say, something happened to me, I've been converted, I've changed, I want to be one of you now. How would we feel about that? What would we think? Well, that's the situation the first century church was facing. Saul had been the leader in persecuting these people. And now, here he comes and he says, I'm going to join together with you to work to spread the gospel. And they say, wait a minute. We don't trust you. We don't think you're one of us. They didn't believe he was a disciple. Notice what happens in the next verse, verse 27. But Barnabas took him and brought him to the apostles and declared unto them how he had seen the Lord in the way, and that he had spoken to him, and how he had preached boldly at Damascus in the name of Jesus. That would have taken some courage on Barnabas' part. Here's somebody that they knew had persecuted Christians. But Barnabas says, no, I know he's changed. And then he told them what he had seen, what he knew about Saul. But we see Barnabas, quite an encouraging character. Courageous and bold and unafraid, willing to go to great extremes, whether it be personally, financially, personally with his own effort of traveling on the missionary journeys with Paul. He risked his life on several occasions in order to preach the gospel. What an example to us he can be. An example of just how to live the Christian life, as well as an example of how to encourage others to lead the Christian life. We all need encouragement from time to time, and there were probably times in Barnabas' life that he needed someone to encourage him. I hope he got it, because he deserved it, because he was one that was willing to encourage others when they needed it. We know that we're going to need encouragement in times of trouble. The old saying says, what goes around comes around. If we encourage others, they'll be more excited, more willing, more desiring to encourage us when we need it. But if we discourage others, then when they see us discouraged, they'll think, good enough for you, you deserved it. We don't want that to be the case. We don't want someone to be thinking of us that way. If you're here tonight and you have a need to respond to the invitation, perhaps you need some encouragement. You found yourself weakened by the temptations of Satan and you need to repent of some sin in your life. Or perhaps you haven't been encouraging others as you should. Perhaps it's something else entirely that you may need the church to pray with you about. If you have a need this evening, we ask that you respond as we stand and as we sing.